Mars shows a surface once abundant with water, rains, and rivers. Where did it go? The entire top half is unbelievably missing its crust. Where did that go? It is almost like the oceans were torn off so violently that the land peeled off with it. Unfortunately, there is no consensus on how Mars got so brutalized. Every time we run a scientific study on how this happened, we get a different answer.
You want to know how I got these scars?
We have to find someone old enough to have witnessed this event. And Keith Richards isn't taking questions. So let's ask Old Man Myth. The Aztec Quetzalcoatl had a twin, or a parabolic counterpart, basically, that was called the Flayed Red God of the East, a celestial being whose top skin was peeled off like an orange and retreated to a new position in the heavens. Pawnee people call Mars Scarface, and needless reminder, they don't have telescopes. The Pawnee trace their lineage back to a celestial courtship between Mars and Venus. So, what does this mean? We have to remember, ancient oral tradition never specifies allegory. They felt no need to draw a line between literal and metaphor like we do. The distinction probably never even occurred to them. It's just how their language is. So to translate into purely non-figurative thinking, we lose meaning, purpose, and moral. Necessity strikes regardless, so what happened? Well, an event involving these two planets marked the primordial origin of their particular age. This event is what set up our current solar system configuration. They also say Mars had a weapon of choice, the Thunderbolt. This is interesting. It indicates that the introduction of a morning star, or Venus, entered our system, causing unspeakable havoc. Interplanetary electrical discharges and plasmatic sky images to tell a story. A story that changed the way life behaves on Earth. Almost like reality as we know it was solidified into physicality by this event. A schism of mind and matter. A crystallization of etheric form actualized within our little pocket of the universe.
This is some of the best crawdad I've ever made.
Right here, let's see it.
Especially the claw. I gave the other claw to the doggy, but...
Wow. Damn. These look great.
There was another claw that was two times bigger than this. So okay. To the dog. All me.
Don't feed this to the dog. This is good stuff. Look at this.
But it was a puppy.
This came out of our creek.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, where else would it have come from?
Yeah. That's right. And I gave the bigger piece of this part to the dog.
This smells like Red Lobster.
Mm-hmm. Midwest.
Specifically that yeah. Red Lobster. The Waffle House Red Lobster.
Can you order some crawdads at some point?
We have them.
Order.
Why would we order them if we have...
There's only three more crawdads in the creek. We don't know if both are male or female. If they are, then we have to wait like another year for them to grow.
Why does it matter if male or female? Because to make more?
To make more, yeah.
Okay.
Because if we eat, find three more and eat them,
yeah,
all the crawdad in our creek is gone.
Dude, you did good. We can build a scientific story from myth, but modern scientific tradition is frankly appalled by this notion, claiming the solar system has been this way unchanged for millions of years. But here's the problem: sheer quantity. Greek, Mayan, Incan, Egyptian, Norse, you name it. And it's the same story under different names. Oral tradition passed down through the ages worldwide by people who never met one another all agree on this happening. Modern science, being the newest cat on the block, say they are all wrong. This is hubris. This is us getting in our own way. This is us assuming that the rules we follow have been the same forever. We're assuming that the laws of physics themselves are a constant, only when local to us. Why would that be the case? Is it possible that we are looking at it all wrong. Our current scientific view of the cosmos is limited to the impression that it's mechanical in nature, that matter floats around and bumps into other matter, and that sometimes the clumping density gets so intense that stars are born and black holes shatter space-time. But there are many problems with this model, and they admit this to be the case by saying, we just need more info to fill in the holes. And then they place words like dark matter and dark energy in the gap as a placeholder to make things kind of make sense until they can add more onto their already perpetuated theories, plaguing our textbooks with an unwarranted certainty. What if it's not mechanical in the first place? And we are spinning our wheels further and further down a path in the wrong direction, piling on more and more complications to fix an already top-heavy delusion. Because this Mars event and a lot of other unexplained space enigmas would actually make a lot more sense if the universe was electrical. 5 episodes back, we talked about Solon visiting Egyptian priest kings and what was learned. A portion of it went like this. When he was questioning their priests, he discovered that neither he himself nor any other Greek knew anything at all. Damn. He attempted to tell them the most ancient of our traditions concerning the first man and the legend about the flood. One of their priests, a prodigiously old man, said, "O Solon, you Greeks are always children. There have been, and there will be, many and diverse destructions of mankind, of which the greatest are by fire and water. The story that is told in your country of how the son of Helios yoked his father's chariot and was unable to drive it along the course taken by his father and burnt up all that was upon the earth and perished by a thunderbolt? That story, as it is told, has the fashion of a legend, but the truth of it lies in the occurrence of a shifting of the bodies in the heavens, a destruction of things on the earth by fierce fire, which recurs at long intervals." So, right off the bat, we see that Egyptian priests understood the literal science behind allegory and were not superstitious with religious fervor, as we have been told. In this case, pointing out that an ancient Greek myth stems from an even more ancient knowledge of astronomy and geology, specifically the friction between the two. "At such times, they that dwell on the mountains suffer destruction more than those who dwell near the sea. And in our case, the Nile, our savior in other ways, saves us also at times from this calamity by rising high. And when the gods purge the earth with a flood of waters, all the herdsmen and shepherds in the mountains are saved, but those in the cities of your land are swept into the sea. In our country, neither then nor at any other time does the water pour down from above. On the contrary, it all tends naturally to well up from below. It is for these reasons that what is here preserved is reckoned to be the most ancient. All such events are recorded and preserved here in our temples. Your people and the others are but newly equipped every time. When, after the usual interval of years, the flood from heaven comes sweeping down, it leaves none of you, but the unlettered and uncultured, so that you become young as ever, with no knowledge of all that happened in old times, in this land, or in your own. The genealogies you related." You didn't see that one, but you know what? That's my fault. I released it on Thanksgiving. The point is, inherited knowledge is not always understood by those who inherit it. This is how myth is born. Let's not confuse this with allegory, which uses symbols to teach. It seems even the great priest kings of Sais had trouble helping people understand that ancient myth always stems from literal happenings, especially celestial happenings. A troublesome transfer of tidings even to the ear of a seasoned Greek stoic like Solon. And over 2,000 years later, the same difficulty was found by a man named Dr. Emmanuel Velikovsky.